From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I am David Woods from the Bruin Report Online. Is it the? Who knows? Is it a definite article? We don't know. The UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And Ryan Abraham from the USCfootball.com. Don't type that out. That's not going to work in your browser. The 24/7 site that covers the USC Trojans. And with David, together, we make the Podcast of Champions. Not champions and picks this week, but that's okay.
Champions, well, one of us was a relative champion.
Very relative. We talk all things Big Ten football, baby, and we are in the meat of it now. Big Ten football meat. Heading into week five. Speaking of meat, on my way over here, David.
Do you have some meat?
Stopped at Costco.
Got some meat?
I got the hot dog and the soda and the little swirl ice cream.
Damn.
It was under $4.
I know. Isn't it incredible?
It's really incredible.
You ever read what the Costco CEO, the original founder, said about if they ever change the price of the hot dog or pizza?
No. What did he say?
That he's going to kill everyone who works there, basically.
So he's like signetting it up?
Well, his whole thing was like it should be, you know, first, it's like great to get people in the door. But second, like people should be able to get a hot dog for cheap.
I love that. Yeah. That's $1.50.
And it's a good hot dog. All beef?
It was not. Yeah, I mean, I hadn't had one for a while. I dropped off some old computers over at Best Buy because they do free recycling. I'm like, I'm gonna get something to eat. Stop by Costco. Bam.
It's a lot of beef. It's a hefty hot dog. Like I kind of struggled to finish it because it's a big ass hot dog.
Yeah.
You know.
Taylor wants to know, how is it being interviewed by Wilken and Eisenberg?
I was not interviewed for that story, Taylor. Taylor, that was not me. They are just very good at their jobs, unlike some people who also wrote UCLA stories. And I'm not talking about Ira, who did a great job on her part of a story that was written for The Athletic. I am talking about the other parts of that story for The Athletic, written by, I don't know, a friend of the program.
Yes. Who knows?
And by the program, I mean Ryan Abraham.
I was in his wedding. Yes. Well, anyway, we got a fun show for you today. We're going to recap everything that happened in week four. We're going to preview week five with some big games.
Chip Kelly is at fault for a lot of what went wrong at UCLA, Bruce. Just letting you know.
Wait, where are you going with this?
I'm just letting Bruce know. I know you're listening. Bruce.
No, he's...
He doesn't give a shit. He's too busy appearing on TV.
He's a famous guy. Well, anyway, we got a fun show for you. A lot of games to recap and preview. If you have questions or comments, you can email us, big10cast@gmail.com. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. We don't have any voicemails this week, David.
So that's sad.
Nothing to play. Tweet at us at B1G Podcast. I tried to do a few tweets from the account while I was in the press box. So we'll try to do it. David doesn't do that ever, so we'll try to do a little bit more of that. We are live on YouTube right now, and it's pretty active in the chat. I'll try to put things up there. If you have a question, I'll start it and get back to it later. We do love getting rated. So the Apple Podcasting app or Spotify, which David hates. He's on the wrong side of history again. He's been that many times. But you can leave us a 5-star rating on either one of those platforms if you're listening on the podcast. On Apple, you can leave us a review, and we'd love to read those. And the best ones, we will send you a Trader Joe's gift card. But I also said, if you're on Spotify and you would like to leave us a review or leave a comment on our episode, that we would send you a gift card as well. David said no one's going to do that. Two episodes ago, we got 12 people that responded to it.
Where do you even see those?
You got to click on each individual episode on Spotify.
On the website Spotify.
I know. I couldn't do it. I have to do it on my phone. Trojan. So I'm going to send Trojan. We're going to send you a gift card. She wrote, I've managed to listen to the podcast for nearly a decade without writing a review, but after listening to a single episode, My daughter insisted that I learn how to write a Spotify comment. Congrats on broadening your listenership to the tween girl market. She loves the funny mascot sounds and the Disney princess discussions and looks forward to spending the entire Trader Joe's gift card on pumpkin spice flavored items. Thanks.
Hell yeah.
What a great comment. And yes, Trojan, sorry we didn't get to look at those last week because it was like kind of a fire drill. But yeah, we'll send you a gift card. Email me, Ryan at uscfootball.com, and we'd love to send you and your tween daughter. Maybe she can listen to Taylor Swift, listen to us, and buy some
I can talk Taylor Swift at a nearly expert level.
Really?
As well.
So yeah. We can tell how old your kids are by, like,
yeah.
Disney princesses. We got some here. Let me start some comments and stuff here. Oh, also, so like I mentioned, our picks were bad. It was a very bad week. We lost a couple.
Some were worse than others.
Yes, mine was worse than David's. I was one ahead of David. We're now tied. So that's bad. But we were both.
You know who you can thank for that?
USC. Yeah,
Aiden Childs, baby.
Yeah,
the great one.
The 75-yard bomb.
Just bombing.
Sometimes there's bad beats. I think we lost two of them by a half point.
Yeah.
And then USC
And we narrowly lost the Illinois-Indiana one.
That was when we got wrong. We crushed the Maryland game. We knew that, like, that was cold. And then the Illinois one, I'm looking back, I don't even know why I picked that, but whatever. But two half-point losses. USC had covered the spread twice, and then they gave up, you know, in the last 2 minutes of the game, a 75-yard touchdown pass for the backdoor cover for
Michigan-Nebraska was a tough beat.
Michigan-Nebraska was a tough beat, but we're staying into it. We're still above 500, which is good. I don't have my lead on David anymore. It's good, but that's going to make a really exciting race. So you like betting on the Big Ten. If you like fantasy, there's bragging rights on all of it. Of course, when you're betting, there's a little more bragging rights because you have cash in your hand. You could have bragging rights if you're going to beat your friends, but you want to have that cash, and MyBookie has it. You did the research. You got your gut picks. Maybe you listened to us. I don't know. Now it's time to cash. So Saturday, of course, college chaos here in the Big Ten. Sunday, if you like the NFL, insanity. Not a lot of upsets early. Now there's been some. With MyBookie, you got every angle covered. Spreads, prop bets, live bets, and the ones you only whisper about until they hit. Set up seamless. One account, one wallet. Bet your game, play some blackjack, and reload without ever leaving the app. And if you're new to MyBookie, you're going to use our promo code POC. Any bet you choose, up to 500 big ones will be fully covered. You make the play. If it doesn't hit, you get it right back when you opt in using the bet back bonus token. It's not fantasy. This is the real season. Let's cash with MyBookie.
That was a beautiful read.
Thanks. I'm getting pretty good at those.
Among the best I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's good, but... thanks to MyBookie for being a great partner over the years. That was a lot of fun.
We love MyBookie.
Yeah, good stuff. I'm going to try to do better on my picks this week. So I do better in my MyBookie account.
Yeah, sure, 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 sure.
Yeah. Kyle said, hold on, let me pull up this. Yeah, we are live. I'll try to pull up your comments as we go. What time do you get home Sunday morning? Scary scene with the MSU player. Yeah, we'll get into that when we talk about the game. But I think it was like 2:30 in the morning when I got back. Is the latest kickoff possible, 8 p.m., which is that was a rough one. After the week before, also getting back at 2 in the morning because it was a 3-hour rain delay and Purdue and all the time change and everything. So,
yeah,
nutty stuff.
Such a rough life covering sports.
It is rough. Very, very difficult. Like digging ditches, but much more physically.
Demanding.
Demanding. Daily Grind says K-pop or Taylor Swift?
Got to go Taylor Swift there, though I don't rule out the possibility that K-pop Demon Hunters, working snack bar softball this past weekend, as well as coaching a game thereafter, I was at the softball field from about 8:30 a.m. to about 12:30 p.m. In that time, I heard songs from K-pop Demon Hunters for maybe a continuous 3 hours of the 4 hours I was there. Like over the loudspeakers, any girl's walk up music, it was either Soda Pop or another song from K-pop Demon Hunters. So I think this is going to be a gateway drug for a lot of the preteen tween crowd in terms of getting into K-pop. Because K-pop had a big thing with Americans about 10 years ago. My niece, who has just graduated college, she got super into it in early high school.
Okay.
I think it's coming back now, and it's going to be huge again. And not that it ever went fully away, So I'm anticipating that I'm going to be listening to a lot of K-pop here soon. But right now, it's still Taylor Swift a lot of the time. Though my kids have also gotten into musicals.
Oh.
So I'm listening to like the Hamilton soundtrack again, which was also a thing 10 years ago.
Right.
But is now a thing for my children. We listen to Wicked a lot. Anyway, things are going well for me.
You must feel very masculine. Yeah.
It's not a masculinity. It's simply I am listening to heartfelt singer-songwriter music as well as musicals, and that's just the life I have.
Nice. Okay. Ryan says, can't wait for this week's Chip Kelly rant from David. No, we're not doing that.
You never know when it's going
to
come.
It could happen. Signetti destroys. I need to play this.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
How bad did we fuck that up?
We're so bad. Hold on. I'm going to play this.
He was given an offer he couldn't refuse. He knows the score. He gets the women. And he kills the bad guys. Signetti. Signetti kills.
Yeah, we suck. I'm going to play this.
God has mercy.
Signetti.
Don't.
Signetti kills.
Like, we should have been all over this.
We're morons.
We suck so bad.
I was buying all these Big Ten idiots who tell me all the time, oh, Bert Bielema, he's really good. No, he isn't. He got murdered.
Yeah.
You've got to have NFL talent at many positions on both sides of the ball if you're going to beat Kurt Cignetti.
Yes.
Illinois does not. That's my new litmus test. If they do not play Ohio State and they don't play, I don't know,
like Oregon?
Georgia or Oregon or Bama, they're going to win by a lot of points.
I knew, like, people that just looked at the Illinois-Duke score thought that Illinois killed it. I'm like, I watched the game. Like, that was close. They kept giving up sacks, and I was just, but what the spread was, like, significant, right? Like, if it was a closer spread, I would have took Indiana, but I was like, oh, that's too many points. Like,
it was 6.5. Close. Yeah.
Yeah. It should, like, how did I not pick it under a touchdown?
We're morons.
Such an idiot. Okay. Anything else we're going to do? We got to recap our games, and we're going to do it with the power rankings going in reverse order. Are you ready for this, David?
I was born ready.
Okay. Start off with number 18.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
Blessedly on a bye. They went bowling last week.
Like?
They went literally bowling.
I was going to say.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like bowling.
I think they should all join a league.
If you can't go bowling one way, you can go bowling another way.
Yeah.
You could say, hey, went bowling.
Look, they're the only team to start 0-3 who's ever gone bowling.
Yeah. So our coach got fired, but we did go bowling that season. And like, wow, what, you guys recovered and get, like, no, we went bowling.
No, in fact, we joined a league. I bought shoes.
Yeah.
I even got my own ball.
I love it. I do have my own ball.
I used to have my own shoes and a ball.
I did have that too. I was in like a league like a long time ago, but it was more of a drunken league.
I lived in Oregon for a little while and I was in a league.
Oh,
it was beautiful.
This wasn't a real league. It was like a drunk league, like co-ed.
I mean, what do you mean a real league?
I mean, like trying to be competitive.
Was it affiliated with the Pro Bowlers Association?
No.
Okay.
It was like basically our beach volleyball people that were just drinking.
But you were in a league that was organized at the bowling alley.
That organized by like the people that we like that I coached the volleyball classes with, it was them.
Okay.
Instead, now it's kickball instead of bowling, but yes. All right. Let's go. Number 17.
Wisconsin Badgers.
And they took on number 6 now.
Maryland Terrapins.
What do we think about dropping the G from Badgers? Wisconsin Batters. They're just bad. Or maybe just dropping everything after the G?
They're
including
bad.
The G?
I mean, if it wasn't for UCLA, Wisconsin would be 18.
Wisconsin's ass.
Yeah.
This was really bad. I think Maryland actually, I mean, look, I know now the lore of the Big Ten and September Maryland is a real thing, and it does tend to turn into a pumpkin long before Halloween. But Maryland actually looks pretty good. Malik Washington is legit.
Yeah.
He is the real deal. But Luke Fickell, buddy, what's going on, homie? They scored 0 points in the first half. It was 20-0 at halftime. This was worse than the final score of 27-10. We were both on Maryland here. Maryland was getting 9.5 points.
Yeah.
What the hell?
We crushed this one. This was our best, obviously.
Yeah, obviously Maryland is quite a bit better than Wisconsin. But good God, Wisconsin's fallen off even from last year when they weren't good.
Yeah. Billy Edwards was done in the first series. That didn't help, but O'Neal wasn't any better. They finally, their touchdown scored 28 seconds left in the game. So it was, this was a three, you know, they had 3 points until they scored like in super garbage time. So it was worse than the score indicated. And that's why we got Wisconsin at number 17. All right, let's go to number, anything else? You good?
No, that's good.
Number 16.
Northwestern Wildcats.
Hey, blessedly on a bye.
Yeah. So
nobody had to watch Northwestern this weekend.
I think they moved up because
nobody had to watch Northwestern or UCLA this weekend. That's how pretty thankful should these people be?
Yes. Go to church, say an extra prayer or something.
Yeah.
We have number 15.
Purdue Boilermakers.
Sadly, people did have to watch Purdue. You know, I won't say the game was closer than the final score appeared.
It was.
But it felt that way.
Yes.
I was watching this in the middle stretches, and like my family was around, and they're like, why are you watching this? But it was like, what was it, 35-23 at halftime? And I'm like, this could happen.
But it was like 23, like...
The third quarter was bad.
But like a minute left in halftime, they had the lightning delay. And it was like somehow Notre Dame scored like two touchdowns in that final 2 minutes. And then right before in the third quarter, it was like, it was a cluster. Like there was like, it was like the middle eight twice or something. It was very weird.
Yeah, it was brutal. So Notre Dame ended up covering by a half point, 56-30. Because they were favored by 25.5.
Yeah.
We both took
Purdue.
We felt
so good about this. And it was a wacky. Like, it should have been. If there wasn't the weirdness like with the lightning and all that stuff, I think it would have been closer.
Yeah. I think Purdue fell way out of rhythm at that point. Because, I mean, they scored 23 in the first half, and then it looked like they weren't going to score again after that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I still think you can still buy Purdue as improved.
I think so, yeah.
And it's just, you know, they fell into a situation where they were facing a team much more talented than them. They had extenuating circumstances and eventually got blown out.
And Notre Dame was pissed off.
Yeah, they were 0-2.
And they scored a touchdown on the very first play of the game. So I'm like, oh, you know, when you're looking for the cover, keep it close. And it was just like, bomb, touchdown. You're like, uh-oh. So it was a very weird one. It was not Purdue's night, but I think they're better than what they showed there. But Notre Dame was not going to take any... They needed to get a win bad. They were 0-2 and still ranked, so they needed a W somewhere, and they got it there. All right. Next up, we've got number 14.
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
Blessedly on a bye.
We could have dropped them because Cal got smoked by San Diego State.
I know, we probably should have.
Like, but where are you going to drop? Like, I don't know.
Below
like,
Purdue?
You want to do that?
Yeah, let's do it right now.
Okay, you can hear you do that. Sorry, we're going to... Purdue, you are number 14. Minnesota, you're number 15. Can you do that, David?
Yeah, no? I'm doing it right now.
Number 13, we've got...
Rutgers, Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knights.
And they're taking on number 10...
Iowa Hawkeyes.
Yeah, boy. Rutgers' undefeated season is over. Was it a very weird undefeated season that was not really feeling like an undefeated season? Yes. But it is now over after Iowa poured it on in the fourth quarter.
We got some comments about
17 points.
That was a lot.
That was a lot. We were just taking the points in this one because we were convinced both teams are ass. I did not walk away from this game thinking either team is not ass. I think they both are ass. I think they're both ass in different ways, but these teams are still ass. I mean, Rutgers, they threw a pick down 31-28 with like 6 minutes to go in the fourth. Then they turned it over on downs. Like, they're ass. Iowa, I mean, their quarterback still threw... for a total of 186 yards. They just ran the ball pretty well. But I think they're ass, too. I think everybody's ass in this game. This is a two ass teams. I wouldn't overreact to any of it.
No, and it, just like the you know, where you're looking at the Purdue game and Notre Dame, like the stuff just wasn't going our way with covers. Iowa returns the opening kickoff of the game for a touchdown. So, of course, we took Rutgers in the 1.5 points. Mark Gronowski, like you mentioned, but he had 3 rushing touchdowns. You're probably not going to get that every week, so you're relying on that. The Iowa defensive backs, super handsy. Like, there were plays where just, like, every pass play, they were just, like, raping the guys, and then they would call a flag, like, half of the time. And the Rutgers receivers are looking like, what the heck is going on? But, yeah, the weird stuff. Rutgers had a field goal that got taken away because of a penalty, then they end up missing it. You know, Iowa blocked the field goal. Like, there was a lot of Iowa stuff going on in this one. And Rutgers just was sort of – I'm not coming away saying, like, okay, Iowa's good or better than we thought. They had a lot of stuff go their way in this game. But we'll see. You know, hopefully – you're an Iowa fan. You hope things are improved and getting better. But that was a weird one.
Yeah. So there were 2 missed field goals and then a blocked field goal in this game.
Oh, okay.
That's a lot.
We have a comment from Eli. The podcast of champions should draw an ass line in the rankings where every team below the line is ass.
So we can't do that, Eli, not at this juncture of the season, because I'm feeling very negative towards the Big Ten right now, and far too much of it would be below the ass line. So, probably 13 teams.
All right, we got number 12.
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
And number 5...
USC Trojans.
This was USC, I would say, controlled this game pretty much throughout. Michigan State never really went away, but USC was in control.
They hung around. Michigan State hung around.
Yeah, and you felt like, okay, they've got this. But then late in the game, USC got a little funky. They fumbled the ball away.
It started with a Michigan State drive that stalled. They punted to USC.
Yeah.
Penalty brings the punt back. Then it's fourth down and shorter. Penalty gives them a first down. 2 more penalties on the drive, and Michigan State scores a touchdown to cut it to 14. USC gets the ball back, fumbles right away, and then Michigan State scores again. And it's a 7-point game, and you're like, what the hell happened?
It was just bizarre, because at that point, like, entering that whole sequence, USC was covering. Because it was I think it ended up an 18.5-point game.
Yeah, that's right.
But they were covering, and then suddenly it was a 7-point game, and it was like, oh, is USC doing the USC thing here? Which is just weirdly looking ass for a stretch.
Yes, they did look ass for a stretch.
Yeah, but then what I was impressed by is that they responded rather than kind of turtling.
Yeah.
And the next drive was... I would say, like, if you're looking back on this season and it ends up pretty good for USC, I would say that drive is going to be a significant one, where they went 13 plays, 75 yards, and took up basically the entire first half of the fourth quarter to do so. It took 7 minutes and 20 seconds, and they scored a touchdown at the end of it. That ended the game.
Yeah.
Like, it effectively ended the game, and it was just kind of what the final score is going to be. But I was really impressed with Jaden Maiava in this game. I mean, I think he showed a lot of command, and... You know what's been missing for me this year, kind of sadly with him, is just erratic decision-making. It doesn't seem to be happening. He seems to be much more poised and just making the right call, like, most of the time. And, yeah, it's only 4 games in, but it's 4 games, and, like, this was a legit opponent. I don't think Michigan State's bad. I think they're fine. I mean, I don't think their defense is any good, but I think they're fine. Yeah. Like, I think their offense is actually... They got some guys. I mean, Mekhi Frazier looked good. Aiden Childs looked good. And they've got, I think, a few receivers who have some real talent. But the most important play of this game, obviously.
USC was covering again, 21 points.
Yeah, it was 45-24 with under 3 minutes to go. All we're trying to figure out is what the final score is going to be. And you know who had something to say about that? Aiden Childs, baby, 75-yard bomb to Omari Kelly for the touchdown. And you knew at that point... Hey, USC is not going to try to score again. Lincoln Riley's not about that life. 14-point win. Good teams win.
Yeah.
Great teams cover.
Yeah, that was the only game we picked differently. And all intents and purposes, USC should have covered that one. But, yeah, it was a – Maiava's playing really well. He hasn't turned the ball over yet. Four games last year, 7 turnovers. 4 games this year, none. Aiden Childs, same thing. Like, he's not turning the ball over. Good thing there. But yeah, USC was just a little too much. They're never punting. Like, they punted in garbage time in this game, but outside of that garbage time punt, 3 of the 4 games they haven't punted.
No, it was kind of what I thought preseason, where it's just like, I think this is the USC, it's a Lincoln Riley offense again.
Yeah.
Like, it isn't. Last year it was broken because he tried to very stupidly and very arrogantly thinking he could run Miller Moss out there to run his offense. He needs an improviser. Like, he needs a guy who can, you know, how many times this year have we seen Jaden Maiava do something that you're like, oh, I could remember Caleb Williams doing he like wiggles his way around. There was one in this game where he wiggled his way for
drive,
a first down.
That important drive in the third, like, they needed to respond because they cut it to 7. It was 3rd and 3.
He should have been sacked. By all rights, should have been. And then he wiggled his way around for, like, not just a first down, but like a long running game.
It was a 13-yard run. Yeah, he did really well with that. He's playing a lot better. So we'll see if that continues as they keep moving on. And we'll move on. Number 11.
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
Taking on number 9.
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow. Scratch, 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 scratch.
So in some ways, this was a disappointing result for Nebraska. In other ways, I think it was a little bit lucky that they were this close. Do you agree with this, given the Dylan Raiola bomb that was connected for a touchdown entering, I think it was halftime, more or less?
Yes, that was a crazy hail. That was, like, there was pianos on heads and stuff, the way the timing went at the end of the first half, where Michigan could have called timeout, and they let it run down to 1 second, and then Nebraska calls timeout on 4th down from midfield, so they have a chance to heave up the Hail Mary without any consequences.
Not the most well-coached game we can remember.
No, Sherrone Moore was on the sideline, or was not on the sideline, so he'll be back now. He was suspended the last couple games. But yeah, that was a really weird sequence. I didn't even like the way Nebraska handled it, but then Michigan did do the right thing, so it allowed Nebraska to do something different, and then they Hail Mary'd it. But it was, I think Michigan outplayed them by, like, significant amount.
Well, I think the story of the game was Nebraska could not stop the run. They just could not. No. All game, Michigan was able to get yards on the ground, and it was only when they kind of deviated from doing so that they were really stopped. But I'd have questions about the defensive line for Nebraska coming out of that one. I mean, I know it's Michigan, and Michigan traditionally can run the ball, but you can't give up, I mean, nearly 300 yards on the ground on 33 carries, too. It wasn't like they ran it 60 times. It was 33 carries for almost 300 yards. You do that, you're going to lose. It's kind of amazing they made it so close. I mean, I do think Dylan Raiola gets a lot of shit for the Patrick Mahomes cosplay. he was good. He was really good, and he was the only reason they were in this game.
Yeah. He didn't have a lot of help.
Didn't have a lot of help. Their run game was no bueno, and his offensive line was also no bueno. But, you know, with his arm talent, he was able to make some things happen, even if he is weirdly sidearming the ball for no reason sometimes.
Brian Wood said Nebraska's lost 28 consecutive games against ranked opponents.
Good God.
That is not good. Yeah, that was a weird sequence at the end of the half, but Nebraska was lucky to be in it. It felt like Nebraska couldn't score, and then, like, oh, crap, the game's ending or the half's ending. We got to try to do something. Like, that's what it sort of felt like to me. Like, they weren't scoring within the regular confines of the game. But, yeah, Michigan, good win there. Bounce back from that crazy loss. All right, this one, I don't even know what to say. I feel like I should just quit doing this after this. Number 8.
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
And number 4.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
How many times did they sack Luke Altmyer in this game?
7.
Jesus Christ.
7 sacks.
Like, my image of this game is Luke Altmyer dropping back and just being immediately sacked. Like, that's... And the thing is, there's so much more to this game. Indiana ran for 312 yards. Fernando Mendoza threw for 5 touchdowns and only had 2 incompletions. But my image of this game is Luke Altmyer just getting collapsed in the pocket over and over and over and over. This was such concerted dominance across the board from Indiana. It's like they were playing collectively insulted that they were ranked 19 and Illinois was ranked 9. Like, this was... One of the most egregious beatdowns I think I've seen from a ranked team on a ranked team, maybe forever, but like definitely in recent memory.
It was the, so I had Jeremy Warner on a podcast because USC's playing Illinois next, they're previewing. He said it was the worst loss by a top 10 team ever. 53-point loss. Like no top 10 team has ever lost by 53 points.
And I didn't even get the sense Indiana was really trying to pour it on late. It's just they ran were the ball so late. Much better than Illinois.
Every aspect, they were buttoned down. They didn't make mistakes. They put a ton of pressure on Luke Altmyer. And if you watched it, like I said, you watched the Duke game, the Duke defensive line was getting after him, and then they just made a zillion mistakes. Indiana made zero mistakes. They just don't make mistakes. And they were pouring it on. If you're watching that game, it was 63-10, and I think Indiana was like driving. They showed Cignetti on the sideline, and I wrote, it looked like someone stole his lunch money. Like he looked pissed off. Like they didn't get a first down or something, and he was upset. Like you're up 63-10 on a ranked team, a top 10 team, and he's looking like he was upset. And then afterwards, he was interviewed, and he said, they couldn't stop us. They couldn't match up on the perimeter, and then we broke their will. I mean, that's like...
Yeah. He knows the score. He gets the women. Cignetti kills.
Crazy. Like, Indiana, no one wants to play this team. Like, you don't want to play this team.
No, absolutely not.
Just broke their will. So he's a killer instinct. Someone had a comment about USC. Like, they got up 21 and they sort of, like, play around a little bit and mess up. Like, Indiana doesn't do that. If you get up 21, he's going to turn it into up 35. Like, he just has that killer instinct. Like there is no letting up once you get, you can't say we're up 21, we're going to win this game. He's like, we're up 21, let's make it 42. You know, like boom, keep pushing.
Yeah.
Crazy shit.
But absolutely.
Insane. All right. Next up, we've got
Washington Huskies.
And they're hosting, or no, they were traveling to
Washington State Cougars.
I'll be honest, this game just kind of makes me sad. Like watching Oregon, you know, beat the hell out of completely undermanned Oregon State, watching Washington beat the hell out of completely undermanned Washington State, just, it sucks. It wouldn't suck. Like, I'm not saying it sucks that like a rivalry game sometimes ends that way. It's that Washington State doesn't even look like they belong on the field with Washington anymore. You know?
It's a different, yeah, it's like they're playing a different sport or something.
Yeah, and it's just like, this sucks. Like, this is not the way this should be. Anyway, I mean, Washington looks really good. I mean, Damon Williams is, he looks at like the peak of his powers. Their offense is gangbusters. I think they're going to give, we'll talk about Ohio State in a second, but I think they're going to give them a game this weekend. Jed Fish clearly has that rebuild going. Like, they look like a very good team should look beating up on a G5 team, which is sadly what Washington State is now. But that's, I don't know. It's just, as somebody who followed the Pac-12 for a long time, it's just...
It's sad.
It's sad to watch a Washington State team that, you know, clearly wasn't able to buy a roster and is having to do the G5 thing.
Washington, I might have the stat wrong, but they talk about not punting like USC hasn't punted. Washington has scored on at least 17 straight drives, and it might be one or two more, but they're just – Devon Williams, like, he's a stud. Like, they're going to have a lot of fun this weekend. But, yeah, that they are not – I think Ohio State will stop them from scoring on at least a couple of drives, but they are just scoring, like for the last 2.5 games. Like it's been absolutely, absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
All right. We talked about Maryland, number 6, number 5, USC, number 4, Indiana. We got number 3.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Rawr. They run a bye.
They didn't play. And then we have number 2. What?
Oregon Ducks.
And they were taking on
Oregon State Beavers.
Another sicko half-point loss for us.
Half-point loss, yeah.
But again, same feelings about this. Oregon State completely overmatched. They threw the ball for 80 yards and ran it for 67.
And this was close early somehow. Like this was
Oregon just took forever to get going.
Yeah,
like they just were not. I don't know. They were clearly disinterested in the game to some extent, which makes sense because you look at that roster at in Corvallis and you're like, oh, that's not a P4 roster. That's not even close.
Yeah.
You know, Oregon State's in a lot worse shape than Washington State is. But it's just, again, Oregon State 2 years ago was a competitive-ass team that could hang with teams.
Or beat
or
an Oregon.
Beat good teams.
Yeah.
I mean, they beat Oregon in Dan Lanning's first year.
Yeah.
And just ran it down their throats because they had competent players. It's just, I don't know. I don't want to get into like the Maudlin stuff, but this just sucks.
Yeah. Landanning, so they were playing with their food early. Landanning in the third quarter, it was, I think, a 14-point game. And I'm like, man, there's no way we're going to get this cover. And he runs a fake punt. And I think the punter just saw it open and just, you know, just took off or whatever. And then he pushed it to 21. And then Oregon could have covered a couple of times. And I think they settled for field goals late in the game, if I'm not mistaken. Again, it was just like these covers that should have happened and they just didn't. Like 34 in a 34.5-point spread where Oregon started slow and still had chances to cover at the end and didn't. It was just like pulling out your hair, frustrating. It was a bad week for us. I was 2-6, you were 3-5. But we're both one game over 500, 23-22. So we'll see how we do this weekend. And then our last team, number one.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
Yeah, they were on a bye.
They were on a bye.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to like shock you there. Natty Riddle.
You didn't shock me at all.
Shocking. So Natty says, sad for the Beavers. And Brian says, Pack did it to themselves, should have supported USC versus the NCAA and been more honest about how the conference was run.
Sorry, hang on. Fart noise.
Yeah.
You know what?
He's not wrong, though. But
yeah. No. I think actually the world would be better if everyone learned to share as children. If you want to have a successful football program for the long term, you know what you need to have? Opponents.
True.
And if you're going to have opponents who can compete at the same level as you, you need to support them if they are not in as big a market as you are.
Oh. Nick says that
this isn't a zero-sum game. Everyone needs to participate. It's why they revenue share at every professional league level.
Yeah. Nick says the fake punt was not planned. I highly recommend watching the Australian punter's press conference about the play. Yeah, I thought I saw that, Nick, where he just said, I hadn't done that before, but it was like wide open, so he just took off and ran or something. I believe that's what it was. I don't know. My brain doesn't work quite as well, but I thought that's what I remember seeing. So thank you for pointing that out, Nick. We got to preview some Week 5 games. We got a lot of good stuff here. You ready?
Sharing is caring. Yes.
You ready,
please,
David?
Please.
Let's go. This is the big noon game we've got.
USC Trojans.
On the road at
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
Stop calling it big noon, please. It's at 9 a.m. All right.
Oh, yeah. We're not.
It's not noon anywhere.
Big
9
a.m. kickoff.
About. All right. Big 9.
USC had the latest kickoff possible. And now they have the earliest kickoff possible.
That's right. They've gotten limited rest. 9 a.m. on Big Fox, number 21 USC at number 23, still ranked Illinois. Illinois is a 6.5-point home dog. Well, first I got to take USC here because Illinois just got the absolute shit kicked out of it.
Yeah, sorry, Griffin.
And I don't know that I can conscionably take them right now. Because that's the kind of loss that can shake the foundations of a program.
Yeah.
If they are situated in a certain way. I still think they've got a really good quarterback in Luke Altmyer. I am uncertain they have a good offensive line. That defense got torn to shreds. And I think USC is also equipped to tear it to shreds. Good run game, good pass game. And Lincoln Riley suddenly willing to actually run the ball.
Yeah.
So, yeah, give me USC.
I'm going to agree with you.
Potentially by a lot.
I think so, too. Where the matchups are is Illinois' secondary is completely banged up, and Indiana took advantage of it. USC obviously can do that. The biggest problem is we saw the offensive line, David, 5 returning starters from last year, and they're terrible. I don't know what happened. Like, they were good. They played against tough defensive lines like South Carolina last year, and they did well. And they couldn't stop Duke from the pass rush. They couldn't stop Indiana. USC leads the nation in sacks. Like, that's not a good matchup. So the fact that...
You don't think so?
USC's receivers are going against a secondary that everybody's hurt, and then a pass rush that's USC doing really well on, and Illinois can't block anybody. Yeah, like a one-score game, I'm going to take USC in this one. All right, next up, we've got...
Rutgers, Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
On the road at...
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
9 a.m. on the Big Ten Network, Rutgers at Minnesota. Minnesota's a 4.5-point home favorite. Eli, you asked earlier for the teams below the ass line. I will tell you, both of these teams are far below the ass line this year. Minnesota, I would say, has a greater chance of rising above the ass line. But still, that feels like too many points for me.
Yeah,
I'm taking Rutgers here. I'm not taking anybody below the ass line by anything more than 3 over another team below the ass line. And I realized that burned us last week against Iowa.
Yeah.
Maybe Iowa's a little bit above the ass line. We don't know. But I think right now, given what we've seen of these two teams and Cal, both of these teams are well below the ass line.
Yeah. Rutgers disappointed me last week. Minnesota disappointed me the week before. So I usually am very emotional about
these
things.
This is the Cal Lake Manis Bowl, by the way.
Yes. I think I'm going Minnesota here because...
Damn,
we've been so wrong, and my gut says I should take Rutgers, but I'm going to take Minnesota because we've been like wrong on these.
Yeah, fair.
It's just it's home, but like Minnesota laid a huge egg 2 weeks ago at Cal, and Cal's not that good because San Diego State smoked them, and San Diego State like had one win or something. Yeah, so I'm going to take Minnesota here for no other reason than to go against you.
Yep,
and because we've been wrong and. I think the same logic you just applied to Rutgers is what I would apply, so I'm going to take Minnesota.
Fair enough.
Let's go with the number one team.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
They are on the road taking on...
Washington Huskies.
12:30 p.m. on CBS, number one Ohio State at Washington. So this has an interesting Washington's an 8.5-point home dog. This has some interesting things going on because Washington hasn't lost a home game in forever.
Yeah.
Ohio State is like undefeated going against teams that are unranked. Washington should be ranked though right now. Like
right.
Ohio State hasn't lost a game against an unranked team in forever. So it's sort of like a, you know, where's the true level of Washington? And I think they're good. I think they're like a top 15 team. I don't think they're unranked. Their offense is gangbusters. I think Ohio State's obviously super elite and very, very good. I haven't been blown away by them the same way I was like mid last year. There's a lot of season left to be played and we could get blown away here pretty soon. Washington's defense hasn't been great. But I don't know. I like this one to be kind of close-ish the way, I don't know, Ohio State versus Oregon was last year. Mm. Like, I think this is going to be a narrow one-possession game. I mean, Jed Fish will probably fuck it up. Sorry, Griffin, because he's a moron, who I still want as UCLA's head coach, but a moron nonetheless. I don't mean that, Jed. I just mean you sometimes make baffling decisions in-game. But I'm going to go Washington.
That's where I wanted to go, too. Should I? Yeah, I'll do Washington. I'm going with you. Even, you know, just for fun.
Washington Huskies.
Play the old one. The Pac-12 one, baby.
That's
yeah,
right, baby.
It's back to Pac. 8.5 is a lot. You know, we saw Ohio State play a good team in Texas, handle like a really good pass rush and stuff. I mean, obviously, Texas' defense better than Washington's, but... Washington's offense is better. I feel like they could keep this one close. I don't think it's going to be like an upset thing, but I think this is more of a one-score game.
They also have a quarterback who's like got that X-factor ability where
yeah.
even with a less talented roster overall, when you have a quarterback like that, he could, you know, take you out of the game by making some baffling decisions potentially, but also he can take it over with his legs and his ability to throw. Like he's got that kind of capability. So, yeah, what the hell? Roll the dice. Washington.
Yeah. Go UW. All right, let's see what we got next. There's something called a peacock. That's interesting. Hmm. We've got
IPO.
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey folks. I'm from Indiana.
At
Iowa Hawkeyes.
12:30 p.m. on Peacock, number 11, Indiana at Iowa. Iowa's a 7.5-point home dog.
Why are we even talking about this?
Yeah, obviously Indiana.
He knows the score. He gets the women. Signetti kills.
Here's the question. Does Iowa score more than 13 points?
No.
Does Indiana score less than 30?
No.
Yeah. Done. Ball game.
I'm not sure what's going on here. Like 7.5. Like, you've seen what, like, now this is on the road, but I was not, if it was Ohio State or, you know, I get it. Like, if you're like this uber athlete kind of team, like, and they do stuff well. They do special teams well. They do defense well. So when you screw up those things, Indiana is like pouncing on you to take advantage. But Indiana can still outclass them. Like, even though if they're not going to like make the kind of mistakes that we saw Illinois make in the other aspects of the game, Indiana's just going to outclass them just offensively. It's like, there's not even close. So yeah, the 7.5 is not enough. So take the Hoosiers.
Yeah.
Baby. This is the probably maybe the game of the year. Probably the game of the year.
UCLA Bruins.
Wow. The big question is, how do you choose what to watch, yeah, right? You could watch ranked Ohio State at Washington, ranked Indiana at Iowa, or at 12:30 on the Big Ten Network.
UCLA at
Northwestern Wildcats.
That's tough, man.
Yeah.
That's tough. Northwestern's a 6.5-point home favorite over the Bruins. If you look at advanced stats, on a neutral field, UCLA would actually be favored.
Really?
I know.
It's kind of a neutral field.
Sort of. I can't go there. I can't. I can't. I've watched 3 games of UCLA this year, which is 3 games too many. Obviously, there's been a coaching change, both with defensive coordinator and head coach. Northwestern is... again, I'm sorry, Griffin, this has been a heavy cursing show. Hot dog shit.
Yes.
Their offense is horrible and their defense is not much better. But UCLA is a special kind of bad, the kind of bad that could go 0-12. Northwestern is no longer capable of doing that. I want to go with hope here. And that hope is that UCLA does indeed achieve history and goes 0-12. So if we're riding with hope, I got to go Northwestern here.
Okay.
6.5.
Wow. Like,
you already had it written.
No, I just wrote it down. I did. As you were saying this, you couldn't do it. I'm back in the pack.
UCLA Bruins.
The old school sound. For no other reason.
Dude, Northwestern is so bad. Like, yeah. I'm sitting there writing my preview, and I'm like, I don't actually know how I pick them to cover. Like, I don't know how I do. Their offense is horrific. Hmm. They're averaging in their FBS games under 4 yards per play.
Yeah. Give me the Bruins.
They're 136th nationally in points per drive. You know how many teams there are on FBS?
136. Yeah, give me the Bruins. Getting 6.5 points, playing near the lake or whatever. I don't know. What's dead cat bounce? That doesn't apply to this, right? But there's some kind of like... You know,
there is no dead cat here. It's just it's two just awful teams.
Right. But UCLA, like, firing the coach, you get a bye week, come out, and there's like, you know, they're dead. Like, the patient is dead, but the arm moves, you know, like there's like this rigor mortis thing or something. There might be a little rigor mortis action. I'm all in on, you know, we all root for 0-12. Like, that's whenever we've had that for, we've been glorious seasons where you have like a Colorado or somebody that we've covered, and we're just rooting for the 0-12 the whole way. And if it gets screwed up, it's just sad. It's like losing a no-hitter in the ninth inning or something. But I'm very invested in 0-12 for UCLA, but this is the big hurdle you got to get over. So I'm going to take Bruins and the points. The Bruins and the points. Yes. Okay. And I don't know if we have to talk about this one. I guess we should.
What? Oregon Ducks.
It's going to be a whiteout, baby. Going to
Penn State Nittany Lions.
4:30 p.m. on NBC. Number 6, Oregon, traveling to number 3, Penn State. Penn State is currently a 3.5-point home favorite. Here's what we've seen from both teams this year. Oregon has not played a good team yet, but they have absolutely murder-stomped everyone they have played. Penn State...
I mean, they played less of
good have teams. Also not played a good team yet. I would say their
Oregon's
murder,
way better.
Their murder-stomping has been...
non-existent.
Yeah, I mean, they've allowed 17 total points through 3 games. So we'll say both teams have done a fair bit of murder stomping of lesser opponents.
Penn State's offense is not murder stomped.
No, they have not been great. Here is the big question for me is, do I trust Dante Moore on the road in a extremely hostile environment?
Is it white out? I'm not sure. What is that like? They're just, it's... inviting, you know, like white is very like open.
They
try to make it pleasurable.
It's like a wedding.
Like a wedding.
Yeah.
Flowers. Yeah. Like, uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh.
And lots of like nice, like stringed instruments.
Yeah.
You know, orchestral music.
Okay.
That's my big question.
It's not a tough environment. I don't know. More of an inviting.
I don't know my answer to that yet. Like whether I trust in Dante Moore, but I do think Oregon is coached by a demon, and I think Penn State is coached by a mortal man.
Okay.
And I do think that plays a role. I've never been super sold on Penn State's offense, and really what's getting me here is the half point. It's the half point.
You're liking it.
I'm taking Oregon because Penn State feels like they are predisposed to, if they would win this kind of game, to win it by 3. And the thing is, Oregon, do they classify as a good playoff contending type team? That's a P4 roster. How many of those games has James Franklin won in his time?
No, that's
at Penn State.
That's fair.
Yeah. So give me Oregon.
Nick says also please pick Penn State. No, we're not doing that. I'm going to go with Oregon as well. I think I just went, I'm backing the pack for all of my picks this week.
Oregon Ducks.
The old school sounds. Penn State offense has not been good. They missed Tyler Warren. They upgraded receiver. It's been okay. Drew Aller just looks like he should be blowing these teams out. His numbers aren't great. Yards per attempt, all that stuff. Like you're playing lesser opponents. You should have gaudy numbers. Like if you're going to be like a Heisman person, you're like, okay, you want everyone saying, well, his numbers are that high because they played crap. Like his numbers aren't that high. That's not been great. Now the argument would be they've held it all back. They're not showing anything until this game because they know they didn't need to. And you know, maybe that's going to be the case. I'm not sure. They still got 2 great running backs, you know, amazing defense. Jim Knowles is, you know, obviously won the national championship last year as a defensive coordinator. I think they're really, really good, but they haven't looked really, really good. And we've seen some teams that we thought were really, really good and kind of stink, like a Clemson. Teams like that, you're just like, oh, a lot of these people just thought, okay, they're going to be amazing. And they're not. They actually suck. I'm not saying Penn State does, but the fact that they haven't shown me amazeballs yet, I'm going to take Oregon, who showed the ability to be amazeballs, taking a Power 4 team, Oklahoma State, and making them look like they were in high school. So 3.5 is a lot. I get it. Tough road environment. I could completely see Penn State winning this one by 10 or something. Like, you know, just things don't go Oregon's way. But I kind of think it'll be close. So 3.5, I'll take the Ducks.
Hell yeah.
We agree. Cool. All right. Why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back and do some questions. Alrighty, we're back here on the Podcast of Champions. Eli says, I'm driving to the whiteout from Detroit. First whiteout, go Ducks, baby. Awesome. And I forgot to mention, the Survivor Pool is still going on. Last week, after UCLA decimated most of us, 46 people entered week 4, 37 survived. Somehow 4 people didn't pick. If you've made it this far, just make sure you make your pick. So the winners were 19 people had Washington, 9 had USC, 8 had Oregon, 1 had Iowa. All of the losers picked Wisconsin, who was you know, 8 or 9 point favorite, whatever it was. Only one surviving player has not yet picked Maryland. After last week, maybe they're onto something. Yeah, because they look pretty good. And there are three teams still available to every surviving player: Ohio State, Penn State, and your UCLA Bruins. It will be interesting to see what this week's strategy is. Do you risk picking UCLA against Northwestern, or just accept that nobody is going to make it to the end and ignore them? I think that would be, if I was still alive, especially since they took me out, that's where I would go.
Yeah.
All right. Email, was the Calvin, the Memoriam one? Did we do that?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Next up is Frank in Kaiser Permanente, Sacramento.
Okay.
It's your fault. I'm emailing from a hospital bed in Sacramento. I overheard the doctors surmise that I have suffered a slow onset stroke. I think it must be after straining so hard to come up with a question for last week's show. No more of that. I think that UCLA's $60 million share of the Big Ten football TV money and the transfer portal will make the Bruins turn around faster than Clemson's. Frank Kaiser Permanente, Sacramento. So he's had a stroke, but I think he's feeling better because he is no longer asking questions.
Okay.
So we wish you well, Frank.
Do you want to do the next one? Sorry, I'm just replying to somebody in the chat. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I do want to do the next one. It's from Thomas. It's a million words long.
Oh, I didn't even look at that.
Yeah.
So I have, seriously, I have not, but...
The water boy.
Someone wanted to know. So, yes, we're going to try to do Wednesdays at the same time. Last week, we had to move it around. But if you don't have Twitter, we normally just put it on Twitter. You can go to our YouTube channel and subscribe. There's a little notification thing. Click on that, and it'll notify you when we go live. Yeah. That's our way.
Here we go. Good evening, Ryan and Dave. I hope this email finds you well. I made the mistake of scrolling through X or Twitter while burning the midnight oil to watch Michigan State versus USC. As the game dragged on, it became impossible to resist commenting on Dave's frustration that the Athletic seems to be carrying Chip Kelly's water. Make no mistake, anyone who has heard the name Lake Seastrunk knows that Chip Kelly is so terrible at recruiting that Oregon had to hire him, his own bagman, for the Ducks to land top-tier guys. And he likely should have been fired by UCLA at the end of the 2023 season because of how weak the incoming class was. But when Bruce Feldman or Stuart Mandel seemed to carry Chip's water about UCLA struggling from not having, quote, financial resources, it is important to remember that they aren't doing it to help Kelly, per se, but rather Martin Jarmond and Bruce's other employer, Fox. Remember, the core of Martin Jarmond's argument to the UC Regents for UCLA joining the Big Ten is that it was the only way to avert a looming financial disaster for the athletic department as a whole, especially non-revenue sports. That wasn't exactly true, though. In fact, former Chancellor Gene Block curiously forgave most of the department's debt right before he retired, but after the Bruins joined the Big Ten in July of 2024. Yet even as Jarmond stockpiled untold riches through the Wooden Athletic Fund and called donors to tell them not to donate to UCLA's NIL collective, the school outwardly claimed poverty. And even as Chip twists that national championship ring from Ohio State on his finger in front of Pete Carroll while watching the Bruins crumble against UNLV from high above in a luxury box, he still has to toe the company line to protect his UC pension earnings. Thus, when writers who had an adversarial relationship covering Kelly like Ben Bolch dispute the actual numbers, they are unwittingly taking the bait. UCLA's cratering fan support has actually hurt the school's bottom line far more than the financial asteroid Jarmond claimed was about to wipe out all signs of life in Westwood in 2022. Kelly's marching orders were to be penny-wise and pound-foolish, and he excelled in that role. There is good news, though. Things are so bad now that the Regents have no reason to question Jarmond's logic, and now UCLA has a giant windfall to invest in football from the Big Ten cutting us checks. The $100 million we need to build our program into a true contender is a drop in the bucket for our rich alumni base. What other FBS program can shake down Steve Urkel, Heather Locklear, Ben Shapiro, and Dave Roberts on the same email? Come on, fellow Bruins, you can do it. Keep it saucy, Ryan and Dave, away from the sauce. Thomas, a lot of what you're saying is speculative. What I will say is the thing that bothers me the most about Bruce's stories is that he carries water for the people he speaks to. Off the record, invariably off the record, invariably they are not named sources, but he is in fact carrying their water.
He's speaking the truth.
So my problem is Chip Kelly has been his source for a long time, and it, because Bruce is one of the preeminent writers on college football, and I will say this, Bruce does a very good job. He's very good at his job, except in this area. And it drives me insane because there's a few people he carries water for because they are unnamed sources in a lot of his stories. You can time them out really easily. Manny Diaz, Mario Cristobal, Chip Kelly. Anytime you see him writing something about Miami, Duke, or UCLA, it is going to be favorable to the head coach and not favorable to the administration if it is at all negative about the school or the performance or whatever.
That is my problem there. My other problem is also that Jarmond is clearly a source for a lot of stuff, and you can tell when it happens because it's invariably hands were tied, or this was just a fait accompli that, you know, Deshaun Foster was the only one available in February of 2024, as if getting to February of 2024 is ever a normal thing an athletic department should do. You should have never been there. You should have never been making a hire in February 2024, first. Second, he wasn't the best available. In fact, he was the worst available. He was the worst hire you could have made. These are just...
You said the worst hire in the history of college football.
Correct.
off the record.
So this is just...
now on the record.
It's water carrying, but it's also just... And this is a common issue, and it's not necessarily just Bruce, but this is a common issue with national writers who are writing about a program they don't cover on a daily basis or on a regular basis, is they're parachuting in, writing as if they know, and then jumping back out. And the thing is, UCLA is a nuanced situation. For the longest time, it was what everyone knows about UCLA. They didn't fund athletics. They just didn't do it. There was that I'm born on third base. We should remain on third base. This is everyone should be lucky to come here. And that didn't work. And it started to fail horribly through the early 2000s. Then you get to Jim Mora, who was also a budget hire, but Jim Mora had something, which was psychosis, and he wanted to actually make UCLA good. And so he did it through sheer force of will, and Rick Neuheisel's players made them good, and UCLA said, huh, we can be good at this? Okay. All right, interesting. UCLA's not stupid. They know where the money is. And so they're like, okay, well, let's invest some in this. Built a new facility. Gave Jim Mora pretty much everything he wanted over the last 3 years of his tenure. Then, when Jim Mora didn't work out, you know what UCLA did? They didn't wait too long. They fired him after one really bad year, and then he was on the rebound. Normally, UCLA is like, oh, this is fine. You know, they won 7 games. This is totally fine. No, they fired his ass. You want to know why? Because Chip Kelly was available. Chip Kelly, the hottest name in college football. Shit. We can get that guy? That's UCLA operating like a big boy. Pretending like that whole period didn't happen is the part that drives me crazy, because people are treating it like a through line story that UCLA was budget conscious and they just continued to be. They blew out the bank for 5 years trying to make this all happen. That's why UCLA's budget situation sucked, because they're also bad at accounting. But it's why they had a deficit, because they blew out the bank to give Mora everything he wanted, to fire Mora with a $12 million buyout. UCLA of 2005 is not firing Jim Mora for any reason if he has a $12 million buyout. But UCLA gets to 2018. They hire Chip Kelly. They give him as much money as he wants for all of his different bullshit that he wants. Food, stupid VR machines, all this stuff that doesn't matter. Gives him everything he wants, and he falls flat on his dick for 3 years. Gets his dick kicked into the dirt. Wins 10 games in 3 years, and then UCLA bows out of giving a shit again. Concurrent with hiring an athletic director who has been a disaster in many, many ways for UCLA. Mm. So it's a complicated story. It isn't, oh, UCLA doesn't invest and they need to invest more, and that's the big problem. They invested. They hired horribly with their head coach. Not their fault, to be honest. Yeah. Sometimes you hire badly. And then they hired an athletic director who wasn't willing to make hard decisions. That's the story. That's it. If UCLA had success again tomorrow, they would invest again. But UCLA for the longest time didn't have a history of doing that. And their commitment to it in the long run was probably not what it needed to be. But that came with a leadership change in the athletic department from the team that hired Chip Kelly to a new team that wasn't willing to make hard choices.
Gotcha. So Kelly just didn't have the resources he needed.
I will jump across this table.
If they would have given him the resources. I think he had gloves and he had a lot of food, apparently. They had lobsters, but just needed more resources. Because he's a relentless recruiter, from what I was told.
Great at donor relations.
Yeah.
Awesome in this era.
Yeah, I do think that's sort of, and to be fair, Bruce even talks about that, like that he wasn't the best at that. And I think if you're a coach like that, and he got out, part of the reason being that, I think, but you have to have an administration that's like willing to, even if you have a coach that's into it, like your administration has to be into it too. It's like everyone has to be on the same page.
Treating it as if Chip left UCLA because the financial commitment wasn't there is a bald-faced bullshit explanation. So he had everything he wanted financially. He needed to do work in NIL. He knew that he needed to do work in NIL, and he bowed out.
Yeah.
That is it. So it's he quit.
People are liking the rant.
He quit on the job. Like, this is the part where it drives me crazy, because you cannot treat what Chip Kelly did as normal. This is a normal person's behavior. It's a normal person's response to stimuli. No, he didn't want to be a head coach anymore. That's the story. And that's a justifiable point. He robbed UCLA for many years where he didn't want to be a head coach anymore. He didn't want to be a head coach anymore coming out of 2020. Like, he was not committed to actually doing the job.
Yeah.
And that's the story. Not, oh, he didn't have the financial resources. If he had the financial resources, he would have competed. No.
I assume that's why. Like, he just, if he would
have. Okay, yeah, literally, if Phil Knight had decided, I'm moving to LA and I'm going to support Chip Kelly and I'm going to give $10 million a year in NIL to UCLA, yeah, Chip might have had a little bit more success. He also might not have. The guy had lost his fastball in a huge way.
The email had Lake Seastrunk in there. That was a pretty good reference.
Anyway, let's continue on. We're going to be here forever if I keep at this.
We had a text message. Hello, David Squared Lumber and Mr. Around the World in 80 Days. For my first ever question to this illustrious, regionally bewildered college football podcast, I'll be asking, which Disney villain do you believe is the most misunderstood and which heroes are actually kind of shitty. Sorry, Kid Griffin Jr. Keep up the great work. And of course, keep it ferociously mediocre. Dazzle in Ventura. Do we have a ferocious? Hold on. I think we do.
Yeah. Ferocious.
Nice.
Yeah, it's good. Which Disney villain is most misunderstood? I mean, the thing is, there are some that are misunderstood within the text of the film itself, right? Like Moana villain is like an elemental, you know, God or whatever, who's upset because you got her heart stolen. Okay. Like, that's not, I mean, I guess she's misunderstood in a certain sense, but also wouldn't technically Maui be the original villain of that story? And he's not misunderstood. He's just kind of immature.
Egomaniac.
Yeah, he's an egomaniac, immature guy. Like, Tangled, I want to say people misunderstood the villain in that one to the extent that she's actually way more evil than you would think.
Oh, I like that.
She's super evil.
Yeah, I don't
know. Does like maybe the most evil thing you can do to a person, like stealing their kid and raising them as your own? That's insane. you know, just like evil narcissistic witch. You know, Frozen, the villain is technically Prince Hans. He's not really misunderstood except by the characters, but again, within the text, he's not. You know, he's kind of just a piece of shit.
I like Snow White, or that, not misunderstood.
Snow White, not really misunderstood unless you buy the, you know, Maleficent angle. Yeah, I would say not really. I mean, I'd say there's not really one who's misunderstood. Which heroes are actually kind of shitty? I mean, Rapunzel's just been abused and neglected her whole life. So, I mean, you can't judge her too harshly. Mulan's cool. I mean, I feel like we might misunderstand Mulan's villain. You know, the leader of the Huns.
How about the prince in the Prince of Arabia one? What's the...
Oh, I don't know. I don't know that movie at all.
No, no, the lamp. Like,
oh, with... Aladdin?
Aladdin, yes.
Good.
I don't
God.
Watch these things.
I mean, Aladdin's kind of shitty.
Yeah, see.
I'll take Aladdin.
I got a good one. Okay.
That was good. That was good. Yeah, we'll go with Aladdin. he's kind of just a doofus.
He's a thief.
And he's just a doofus too.
Yeah. And then he, you know, lied.
Ariel's kind of stupid too.
Really?
Like her whole deal?
I mean, she had like change her worlds, right? Like water to
I mean, and is Gaston really evil? Or is Gaston like thinking he's doing the right thing? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, a lot of things to think about. This is from Jason. Josh Pate is an idiot.
Okay.
Hey, Jeff and David Abraham.
I just finished watching an 8-minute video of Colin Cowherd and Josh Dummy Pate talking about how the UCLA football head coaching job shouldn't be considered a top 50 head coaching job in college football. Josh Pate then goes on to talk about how living in Bloomington, Indiana is much more attractive than living in LA. Oh, well, that's just stupid culture war stuff, so don't worry about that. My questions for you, David Abraham, is one, is there an anti-UCLA lobby in the general college football media world where the whole job is to talk down UCLA as much as possible? No, I think you're bumping into.
Is that for me or for you? You're Jeff.
I think I'm David.
I'm David Abraham. My middle name is David, so I think.
Oh, okay.
I think that's for me, but.
Well, I have a thought there. I think this is actually more. There's a cultural impulse to denigrate anything in California from certain subsets outside of California these days. So I just, I think that's part of what's going on there. Two, would you attribute this hate to misinformation or jealousy? Anyway, you answer that then.
Okay. As far as I don't think there's that, but like guys like Josh Pate are, if you want to talk about carrying water, they're going to carry water for the SEC. They value caring. They value people that pack stadiums, and even if you're Mississippi State and you suck, like you show up for everything and do your cowbells or whatever it is, the fact that UCLA is not showing up to games, they're going to knock the Bruins a ton for that. So I don't know if that's misinformation or like jealousy. I think the California aspect of it too, because there's all these advantages and you're not in Starkville, you're in Los Angeles. But I think, I think that if you're not showing that and down there, like the world is college football. In LA, like it's part of the fabric, but it's not the most important thing. And so I think there's some of that where, look, we treat this as the number one thing all the time. And it's like, well, you can't go watch Shohei Ohtani down the freeway, or LeBron James over here, or there's Mike Trout over there. Like there's just none of that. So I think some of it, I think a little bit of both.
I want to be judicious about this because there's a lot. There's appeal in living in places like Bloomington and stuff like that.
Yes.
Because housing costs are significantly cheaper. Like cost of living is way cheaper. But in Bloomington, Indiana, it gets cold as fuck for a huge portion of the year. And I just want to be clear. It's what is it outside today? Is it 75, 80 degrees?
It was a little colder. It might be 72 or something.
Correct. Yeah. What's it going to be in 2 months?
It's going to be 72.
Like, I'm not meaning to be like California superiority of all, because there's a lot of shit that sucks here. Like,
right.
Cost of living sucks. Like, rent sucks. Mortgages suck. But there's a reason it sucks. It's because this is a very good place to live. Yeah. Like, the reason people from back east moved west and made all this stuff suck and cost way too much money is because the weather is nice all the time. You don't have to shovel snow. Snow doesn't exist here. It doesn't. So, yeah, it's like from just a living standpoint, like not how much money you have to pay to do it, not the damn libs that you have to deal with, but like just like I don't have to shovel snow. I don't have to salt the fucking ground.
If I wanted
California superior.
If I wanted to go eat outside for lunch, I don't look at the weather.
Like I don't just have to wear a parka.
I assume
ever.
I can do it. Yeah.
Like I don't. I'm not living in Chicago, so for 6 months of the year, I don't have to drive from my underground parking garage to my underground parking garage at work, never opening my car door outside because I may freeze to death immediately.
Tony says, "Fun fact: lots of Americans love four seasons. That's a myth."
No, absolutely false, Tony. Tony, you love it when it snows the first time. How about when it's in the second month of just pure snow and you have like ice built up under the snow and you got to like chip at it with a fucking pickaxe to get it off the ground?
Griffin's just like,
sorry, Griffin.
He's had to check out of this episode.
Yeah, but like, come on. Let's be honest with ourselves, all right? Don't tell yourself you love four seasons, okay? You love three of them. Three of them are great. We love the three of them. But when the fourth one lasts for 5 months, we don't love that one. We don't even need to tell people that we love that one. That one is not to be loved, and that's fine. But here, you don't even have that fifth season, the fourth season. You don't have it. It doesn't exist.
We don't have any.
We've got a couple. We've got early summer. We've got midsummer, and then we've got late summer. Early summer, it can rain sometimes. Late summer, sometimes the trees die. And it burns all the time.
Yeah. coming from Massachusetts, when I went to USC for my freshman year, like I never shut my dorm window, like the first semester, I never closed it. And I was like, this is amazing. And I've only lived in the Northeast, like Pennsylvania and Massachusetts. So only knew snow and standing at a bus stop. And I'm not someone that cares about winter sports very much. It's fine to go home and visit and throw snowballs and stuff. But once I came here, I was like, hell yeah, I'm not leaving. And it's not for everybody. I get it.
I want snow. I go up to Big Bear. I can go throw a snowball. And then I drive back to my house where it's 70 degrees. Like, I don't, again, I'm not saying it's perfect. And again, I understand living in other places. I lived in Atlanta. I liked Atlanta. It's got a lot of the advantages of California, and it's also cheap. Like, I like it. But what there is in Atlanta, in addition to mostly okay weather, is it's humid as hell. You know what you don't get here? Humidity. Yeah. Like, you get a little bit, and you're, like, complaining about it, but it's not really anything.
It's especially where we live at the beach. Like,
it's nothing.
There's like, no bugs, by the way. Like, there's no, like, mosquitoes when it's hot. Like, yeah, you're somewhere in Bloomington. I bet you get your ass bitten up by mosquitoes.
Tony, you're talking about things that I've already acknowledged are true. I'm just trying to explain. When you're saying what place is nice to live, it's the one where the weather is always fine. Always. Like, yes, are the taxes insane? Sure. Does it cost a ton of money to live here? Yes.
Yes.
Traffic
terrible.
But the reason it costs a lot of money is because everybody wanted to live here.
Yeah.
The reason this is the most populous state in the union is because everybody wanted to live here. Do you know why they wanted to live here? Because the weather is always good. The reason the entire East Coast in the 1950s said, not only are we going to move all of our people, we're going to move our fucking baseball teams out here, is because the weather is always nice.
Yeah. All right. Well, we can, that's enough, right? Like, there's amazing place. Oh, did we finish his or no?
No, we haven't.
Okay. We didn't go on the thing.
And a fun question for both of you. 3, if you took out LA, Seattle, Madison, and Chicago from the equation, what Big Ten city/village would you want to live in and why?
Okay. No LA, no Seattle. I've never been to Madison. I want to try that out. I do like Chicago.
I'm going through them. So
we don't have the Bay
I don't
Area.
Want to live
we don't
in
have
Eugene
the Bay Area anymore. Yeah, I don't want to Eugene. We don't have the Bay Area.
It's got to be Jersey. It's got to be Rutgers, right?
I mean, Maryland I could do.
Maryland I could get behind. I mean, honestly, most of these places I don't mind. I wouldn't mind living in Bloomington, just to the earlier point.
Yeah. Columbus, I think that if you want city, like that's cool. I think Nebraska would be too remote. Like,
the only place I 100% would not want to live is State College, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, just too far away. Like, I would need to be near, like Columbus, at least I'd feel like
I want to be able to get out of there, yeah, like with some alacrity, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And then a final question for Jeff. What is a country that you have visited and would 100% recommend everyone else to visit? Is that for you or for me?
You're Jeff.
The only country I've ever been to besides the United States of America is Ensenada, Mexico.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have a passport?
Yeah.
Okay.
I got it to go to Ensenada, Mexico.
Yeah. I don't travel much either.
Yeah, I know you don't.
All right. This one's Foster's Island. Piggybacking on last week's UCLA Gilligan's Island bit. I'll try this one. It's for you to sing it. But the following song, set to the theme song of the show, I believe you're contractually obligated to comply. I'll give it a try, and then if you want to do it, you can too. Okay, here we go. Just sit right back and hear a tale of a school that's lost its way. Its name is UCLA, and their fans all turn away. They play out in Los Angeles, but still can't get recruits. Their glory days are long gone. No titles left in view. No titles left in view. The AD naps and slumbers. The stands are hardly full. We all know it's just because they're a basketball school. A basketball school. So join us here each Saturday. They're sure to break your heart. They never should have fired Chip. Now watch it fall apart. Now watch it fall apart.
That was beautiful. Can we get a round of applause for Ryan?
I'll do that. Thanks. I'll give myself applause. Yeah. The first part was weird. I don't know how to do the its name is UCLA, like to make it go to the...
You nailed it. I wouldn't have been able to do that because I don't remember the theme song that well.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks. It says, keep it mediocre, Robert from Texas. I might have to like clip that.
Oh, I've got another question. You ready for this one?
Oh, yeah.
This is from Leo. A question for Dave. Dave, you're going to like this one, Ryan.
Okay.
Is there a polite way to ask Bruce Feldman if his head is far enough up Chip Kelly's ass to check for polyps, asking for a friend?
I'm saying if he had the resources, I think Chip Kelly would have been very successful. Like, I agree with Bruce. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, beautiful. Rick Neuheisel, didn't you interview him?
I haven't spoken to him yet. He actually didn't call me back.
Was he? You were supposed to?
I was supposed to.
You got to ask about the gloves, right?
Obviously, I've got to ask about the gloves.
Yeah, duh. We got some comments, questions in the chat. Let's go Malone. Thoughts on Garrett Riley to UCLA. From what I've seen, heard, he didn't bring his TCU schematics to Clemson. It feels like Dabo is still running the offense. Riley brothers in LA could be fun.
Nope.
Yeah, like they want to fire him. So I don't think you want to get a coordinator that, like, he might be really good and maybe he's being throttled by.
He's got to go get that stink off him somewhere, but it shouldn't be as the head coach at UCLA.
I think that's too big of a jump. I agree with you there. Kyle, listening to Coward today, Jason McIntyre mentioned he heard from a high up source that Kalen DeBoer to UCLA could happen. Shocked he said that on air. Don't be shocked they say anything on air.
They got to fill air, man. I don't think anybody's saying anything about a coach being hired at UCLA right now knows what the hell they're talking about. The search has barely started. Yeah, there's some stuff. There's some names that you can probably expect to be involved. I think if Kalen DeBoer got fired at Alabama, I think he would be definitely somebody UCLA would try to talk to, but he's got to get fired at Alabama first.
Yeah.
They could fire him this year, but I think a lot of losing would have to happen first.
I mean, they got embarrassed by Florida State, but they can still make a run. Like we've seen,
if they make the playoff, I mean, it's the same thing as Ohio State last year. I mean, if Alabama finishes, I mean, what could Alabama do this year? Let's look at their schedule real quick, just because people keep saying
they got Georgia this weekend. So.
They've got Georgia this weekend, but like you know, I mean, they could beat Georgia.
Yeah.
But all right, they've
beat Georgia a lot.
After that, it's Vandy. Vandy beat them last year, but it's at home this year at Missouri. Tennessee. So the next four games will tell us a lot. Then it's out South Carolina, LSU at home, Oklahoma at home, and then they close with Eastern Illinois and Auburn. If they go 9-3, if they go 9-3 with the schedule, they're probably making the playoff this year.
I think so. Yeah.
So it's a lot's going to depend.
That's a brutal stretch.
You know, if they're at three losses coming, you know, into the middle of October, then yeah, they're probably firing Kalen DeBoer. But if he beats Georgia this weekend, I mean, they could be poised to go 10-2, 11-1.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. There's still a lot of season left is my point. And you can't base your coaching search on whether or not you think maybe somebody's going to get fired. I mean, Alabama would have to shell out a lot of money to fire him.
Yes. There'd be a massive, massive buyout. Malone had a question. Thoughts on game day to UCLA? From what I've seen, heard, I'm sorry. This was the wrong one. Is this
Ryan?
From what I've seen, heard, he didn't bring it. Oh wait, that's the same one. He redid it. Sorry about that. Garrett Riley at UCLA. My fault.
My goodness.
I am sorry. I gotta like. We have Matthew. Is Lane going to play this weekend? So he's talking about Jacoby Lane. He was out there at practice. I think I didn't think he was going to play, and now I kind of think he will. So we'll see.
Most importantly, is Mekhi Lemon going to play?
Mekhi Lemon's definitely playing. Yeah.
Then what do we care?
Yeah. He's really good. Kyle, guy's honest question, is Nebraska a blue blood? I don't think they are anymore. I think it's like history is, yeah, like they definitely were. I think it's been too long.
It depends. I mean, if you're just talking historical record, yes, obviously they had the historical success. I think when people think of a blue blood now, they think, is there some ability to reclaim that level of success? And the thing with Nebraska is they don't have there's not a natural advantage to Nebraska. They don't have a huge recruiting base in state. Like, what is the advantage of Nebraska? It's still just kind of being Nebraska, like that name.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't think they can recreate that success easily. I think it requires a dynamite head coach and the right confluence of circumstances and some well-heeled alumni shelling out a lot of money. But like,
just for an example, the reason UCLA is and forever will be a blue blood in basketball is because no matter what you do, UCLA is still, as Deshaun Foster once said, in LA. Like, you still have access in your backyard to, like, if you look at, just for one example, like the 2020, I think it's six recruiting class in basketball, there's a million top players in California. Like, UCLA doesn't have to go far.
Yeah, you could trip
to
over
go
them.
Get all of the players it needs on its roster to be a title contending team. So UCLA basketball is always just, you know, the right coach away. Nebraska is a little bit more than that. They're the right coach who then, you know, berates Warren Buffett into giving, you know, $1 billion to the program away.
I think Nebraska has money. Like in the chat, Matthew said, like, they have money. Yeah, they're putting resources into this. And this was a year they put a lot of resources in. And if it's kind of a meh year, that's not a good sign, because it's not like UCLA where they're just not putting resources in or whatever. They put the resources in. So you want to see some results. And
Yeah, for sure. I'm just saying, like, it's a harder sell even there, because, like, if you get the money right, you still have to contend with, like, all right, so say you've got the money right to the same extent as Ohio State and Oregon, right? You still have to convince them to come to Nebraska instead of Ohio State and Oregon.
Yeah.
And there isn't, like, a natural advantage to Nebraska because they don't sit in a recruiting base. And the same is true of Oregon, but Oregon has Phil Knight.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing is with Oregon, if Phil Knight, when he goes away, when he's dead, and they don't have the, like, Nike relationship anymore, will it sustain? You know? Yeah. Or are they the, like, current Nebraska, and then within 20, 30 years, we're sitting here saying, wow, is Oregon ever going to get it together again? That is if college football still exists in 20 to 30 years, yeah. And the Big Ten will probably make sure that doesn't happen. I'm down on the Big Ten right now, guys.
Yeah, I apparently are. Yeah, I mean, Nebraska, I think you have to look at, everyone has advantages, disadvantages. Like, okay, Nebraska's not near talent. There's things that can be a disadvantage, but the passion is great. Like, they're going to sell out every game. It's going to be the only game. Like, when Nebraska football is going on, everybody cares. And so that's something you can sell to recruits.
The entire state is Nebraska. Like, the entire state is Nebraska fans. So that's a big factor. I mean, I do think that's something you can sell. I'm just saying, you know, the same is true of a lot of Ohio too.
Yeah.
With Ohio State. And if you get the money equal to Ohio State, is somebody picking Nebraska over Ohio State? Maybe in the margins,
but yeah, it depends, you know,
not most of the time.
Tony will finish with this. How much money does UCLA have to pay the next coach per year?
Totally unclear at this point. Okay. We've heard enough that, like, some boosters are involved, but, like, I think there's going to be politics involved in this, because UCLA always has to get big expenditures approved by the regents. The regents of the University of California, the best way to think about them is low-rent politicians. Gavin Newsom is the head of the regents, essentially. He's the head of the University of California, more or less.
Good luck.
So you got to think about it in that context, and think about it in the context of, and I'm not bringing up politics here, I'm just saying Trump has put the thing to, you know, all the research contracts on hold, right? The $1 billion in
it's hurting a lot of universities. Yeah,
hurting a lot of universities, UCLA in particular. UCLA has to contend with that, and then there's the optics of, okay, can we really shell out $10 million for a head football coach when we might have to come up with a $1 billion research shortfall? So there's optics. I still think explaining it is pretty easy. It's a comparative drop in the bucket, and football is revenue positive if you run it correctly. But it's an optics thing. And so I think there's the ability to pay. I think they've got booster support who would pay. But even booster-supported funds need to be approved at the University of California regent level, which might not be a slam dunk. So don't know. I think they're going to be able to pay reasonably competitively. I think the big thing is, though, with the state of the UCLA job, they probably need to overpay if they want to get somebody good. And that's the part I don't know if they're going to be able to do.
Cool. All righty. Well, that's going to wrap things up here. We went like an hour and a half. You want to do a screenshot? Any ideas?
No.
Do you have any ideas?
Not really, no. We could. I like that. Okay. For David Edwards, I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.